see. Niyoga shuchacha ritra vihina deva hilandhanyapa vratani nija nichichiha grinana ashdanana chamana shuchha kesho lunchana dini kalena dharma Vahuleno pahata diho brahma brahmana yagya purusha loka vidusha ka prayena pavishanti. So you repeat? Yena. By which pseudo-religious system? Ha vava. Certainly. Kalo, in this age of Kali, Manuja Apasadaha, the most condemned man, Devamaya Mohitaha, bewildered by the external energy or illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sva vidi niyoga shocha charitra vihinaha. Without character, cleanliness, and the rules and regulations given according to one's own duty in life. Deva hilandhani. Negligent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Apavratani. Impious vows. Nija, nija, itchya. By their own desires. Grinanaha. Accepting. Ashnana anacha mana ashocha kesha ulunchana adhidni. Concocted religious principles. Such as no bathing, no washing of the mouth. Being unclean and plucking out the hair. Kalena, by the age of Kali, Adharma Bahudena, with an abundance of irreligion, Upahatatiyaha, whose pure consciousness is destroyed, Brahma Brahmana Yajna Purusha Loka Vidushakaha. Blasphemous towards the Vedas, the strict Brahmanas, ritualistic ceremonies such as sacrifice, and toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the devotees. Prayena, almost entirely. Vavishyanti, will become. So translation, people who are lowest among men and bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord will give up the original Varnashram Dharma and its rules and regulations. They will abandon bathing three times daily and worshiping the Lord, abandoning cleanliness and neglecting the Supreme Lord. They will accept nonsensical principles. Not regularly bathing or washing their mouths regularly, they will always remain unclean and they will pluck out their hair. Following a concocted religion, they will flourish. During this age of Kali, people are more inclined to irreligious systems. Consequently, these people will naturally deride Vedic authority and the followers of Vedic authority, the Brahmanas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the devotees. You can repeat. People who are lowest among men, and bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord,
will give up the original
Varnashram
Dharma
and its rules and regulations.
They will abandon bathing three times daily
and worshiping the Lord.
Abandoning cleanliness and neglecting the Supreme Lord,
they will accept nonsensical principles.
Not regularly bathing
or washing their mouths regularly.
They will always remain unclean.
And they will pluck out their hair.
Following a concocted religion,
they will flourish.
During this age of Kali,
people are more inclined to irreligious systems.
Consequently, these people
will naturally deride Vedic authority.
The followers of Vedic authority,
the Brahmanas,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the devotees.
So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Presently, the hippies in the Western countries fit this description. They are irresponsible and unregulated. They do not bathe, and they deride standard Vedic knowledge. They concoct new lifestyles and religions. There are many hippie groups at the present moment, but they all originated from King Arhat, who imitated the activities of Lord Rishabhadev, who was situated on the Paramahansa stage. King Arhat did not care for the fact that although Lord Rishabhadev acted like a madman, his stool and urine were nonetheless aromatic, so much so that they nicely scented the countryside for miles around. The followers of King Arhat went under the name James, and they were later followed by many others, particularly by the hippies, who are more or less offshoots of Mayavadi philosophy because they think themselves of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such people do not respect the real followers of the Vedic principles, the ideal Brahmanas, nor do they have respect for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Brahman. Due to the influence of this age of Kali, they are apt to concoct false religious systems. So, Om Magana Timadandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, continuing the discussion yesterday, which was based on the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and Arjuna's question at the beginning of the 17th chapter, where he questions, you know, what is the religion if one does not follow Shastra, meaning the Vedic literature at this particular point, is it in goodness, passion, or ignorance? And Krishna, of course, replies, according to the mode that one is in, one develops a religion in goodness, passion, or ignorance. As I said yesterday, it's not that Krishna is just answering the question with restating the question. He's actually telling Arjuna what type of religion people follow when they're in particular modes of nature. So people are attracted to certain types of religion. Now, unfortunately, in this age of Kali, we have this many statements like Kalo, Shudra, Sambhavat. Everybody who is born in Kali Yuga is a Shudra. In spite of what some of our ritualistic Brahminical friends may say, they may say, you know, I was born in a Brahmin family or this family or that family. But actually, everybody is born in a Shudra. And even the Brahmanas, there's this statement, and I don't like to tell this in front of people from Brahminical culture or from a Brahmin family, but it said in Kali Yuga, many demons will take birth in Brahmin families. It's not that everybody who takes birth in a Brahmin family is a demon. You know, we have to clarify that because it would offend some people. But, you know, it's a fact that many demons take birth in Brahmin families, and many demons take birth in Kshatriya families. Many demons take birth in Shudra families or Malatya families. I mean, practically speaking, everybody by nature in Kali Yuga is a Shudra. And then, of course, the second statement part of that verse is samskara bhavet dvijam. That only by the proper samskara means reformatory practice. And just like in the Vedic system, we have all these samskaras. Like yesterday, we did a samskara. It's called antyeshti. Antyeshti means ancha means at the end, like Vedanta means the conclusion or end of Vedanta, and antyeshti means at the end of life. You understand? So we did. We were at the crematorium yesterday, and we did the ceremony for the departure. Well, the soul already departed, obviously, but for the cremation ceremony, that's called antyeshti ceremony. So, without these samskaras, then everybody's shudra. Prabhupada actually said something very heavy. He said, if the householders don't follow the Garbhadhana samskara, then the whole family becomes shudra. Wow. I mean, it's very heavy statements Prabhupada made about that. So, but anyway, practically speaking, nobody follows the samskaras. I know my parents didn't, at least to the best of my knowledge. I can ask my mother today. I'll call her up. So because of that, everyone is shudra. What a shudra means, inclination towards the mode of ignorance. I mean, we have to understand what shudra means. Shudra also means, as Prabhupada defined one time, lamentation. You understand? Lamentation. Oh, woe is me. You know, like you have that genre of music, the blues, singing the blues. Oh, woe is me. Gave my whole life to Krishna. What did I get? 16 rounds, another day older and deeper in debt, as the song goes. So, therefore, people are naturally inclined towards shudra activities. I mean, that is the inherent quality of everyone. And even when one takes the samskara, becomes initiated, we're talking about initiation at this particular point, there's still that inclination towards the shudra consciousness there. One should be very, very careful. Like Prabhupada told that story, of course, about again become a mouse. You know, there's... let's talk about hippies here. Like, it's interesting that when people started to grow, at least the men, started to grow a little bit too much hair, what did Prabhupada say? Anyone know?
Hippie seeds.
I mean, it's really interesting that Prabhupada said that. You know, someone has too much... He didn't say that to the women, you know, hippie seeds to the women. But he said it to the men. Really interesting. Hippie seeds. What that meant was that the actual seed of ignorance, because, you know, hippie, Prabhupada was one time asked by a reporter, you know, what is a hippie? And Prabhupada said, you know, it's something wonderful. Prabhupada was joking with the reporter. But, you know, hippie means exactly something here, in the mode of ignorance. I mean, in the name of love and all that, all those other things. I'll give you a practical example. Like, of course, they had all these political protests, right? Apparently, you know, they were protesting, give peace a chance. I don't know if anyone remembers this song. All right. You know, give peace a chance and everything like that. So at these political protests, you know, they were trying to, you know, overturn the government or something like that, you know, because there was the war going on. But there was more illicit sex and intoxication and political protests. I mean, that's really why many people went to the political protests. I mean, maybe they had some mixed intentions, but it was just like, it was a love-in. Anyone's heard of that word before? A love-in. And even Prabhupada termed our Sunday program a love feast. And the reason for that is because people would, in that particular culture, would be attracted to it. You know, Prabhupada was expert in preaching Krishna consciousness. It's not that we have to be calling the Sunday love feast eternally. You know, it's not like written in some spiritual stone, the Sunday love feast. But the reason is because Prabhupada was basically, you know, in the movement, we were basically preaching to these hippies. So they had love-ins. All you need is love. And then we had our love feast. Isn't it? The love feast. And actually, probably another time he said, like, the uncivilized men have their love feast. What they do is they take their grandfather and throw him off the roof to soften him up. And then they eat him. Or cook him first. I'm sorry. I apologize to the uncivilized people. They wouldn't eat the person raw. They would cook him. So therefore, Prabhupada did use that term, you know, love feast. It's not, nowadays, I mean, it's going to be hard for people to relate to that. Like if you go to our community, you know, people who have some jobs and everything like that, and people who wear clothes. I think most of our community wears clothes most of the time. If you say it's a love feast, it's just it's a remnant of the 1960s. It's interesting how devotees hang on to a lot of those remnants of the 1960s and the nomenclature and the words they use. You know, that's really cool. I'm getting high, you know, whatever. I remember when people first joined the movement and they were chanting Hare Krishna, they would say to each other, have you gotten high yet on the holy name? Or even, you know, Prabhupada used that advertisement, stay high forever. You see, actually, there was a lot of nomenclature used in those days. It's really not relevant now. I mean, because high, I guess, is still used. People still take intoxication? I don't know, but I guess they do. Right? So that's the point. We should use nomenclature or names or present ourselves in terms of the culture, not in terms of the hippie culture of 30 years ago. You know, all you need is love. So, anyway, getting back to the point is that we all have these tendencies towards the mode of ignorance because it's Kali Yuga. So we have to be very much alert at all times, like the Prabhupada said, the hippie seeds. I mean, just little thing like that. Can you imagine, you know, the guru was saying, just because you have a little hair, it's a hippie seed? I mean, it's just, why did Prabhupada say that? He said that because the tendency is there, the seed is there all the time to fall down into the grossest ignorance. And we saw that happen. We continually see that happen. Even with some of our leaders or devotees in the temple or, you know, people in the congregation. I mean, people really slip away from Krishna consciousness and they get into the grossest things sometimes. Because they're not attentive. Because the natural, sensual tendency is there. You know, if you're not attentive, like Prabhupada said, razor's edge. Krishna consciousness is like a razor's edge. Then you get cut. You know, if you allow Maya to enter, I mean, let's say you start watching Bollywood films, because there's no one here who watches Bollywood films, but previously we used to have a pujari who watched Bollywood films. You may say, well, it's just like, I like it. But what does it do? You're allowing the mode of ignorance to enter in your consciousness. So that's an important point. Okay, so apart from devotees, like having spiritual trouble because they allow in the mode of ignorance to enter the consciousness because they don't understand their natural tendency is ignorance. That is our natural physical, psychophysical tendency of most 90% of people, 99% of the people in Kali Yuga. You better admit it. It's sensuality. Sensuality. And then also what goes along with that is lamentation and hankering. Shochati kanchati, you know, lamentation, you know, the extreme depression, like that, you know, like we say, the diseases in Kali Yuga are anxiety and depression. So apart from that, then Prabhupada here talks about the different concocted religions. So we find that most of the religions and religious practices in Kali Yuga are really in the mode of ignorance because they're not following even their own shastras. Like if you ask Most Christians, you know, where does Jesus Christ say this or say that? And they really don't know where that particular injunction is, and they do so many things that, like it says in the Bible, for example, he who slays an ox is the same as he who slays a man. There's that statement in the Old Testament. Jesus Christ didn't come to throw away the Old Testament. He came to throw away the rituals that had nothing to do with the essence of religion. Like offerings we mentioned before, like offering lambs in the Temple of Jerusalem, you know, the lamb sacrifice. Because Jesus Christ is sometimes compared to be the Lamb of God, right? A sacrifice for his disciples or for his followers. So that's what he came to do. But not to throw away the injunctions of Shastra. You know, in the Bible you have all these things, what? The Ten Commandments. So many injunctions are there. Yet, as Krishna says in the Gita, Shastra Vidam Ushricha Vartate Kamakarata Nashukam Naparam Gitim. One who throws away Shastra Ushricha, one who just gives up Shastra, Yashastra Vidim Vidi. Vidi means the instructions. Yet Shastra Vidi or Vidim, that's a plural. Yashastra Vidim Ushricha, one who gives up the injunction of Shastra Vartate Kamakarata. Kama, karata, because of karma, or lust, then he cannot achieve nashukam naparam gatim. Those of you who know Bhagavad Gita. He cannot achieve happiness, nor can he achieve the supreme destination. So you find that, like so many, in the name of theologians, or religious people, they just concoct. And they make everything very either humanistic or just put in their own principles. And that happens in every religion. I mean, you have the Muslim religion too, which, you know, Muhammad is, of course, a great personality, servant of God, prophet, and we accept that. But we find the modern-day followers are doing something completely different than what Muhammad advocated. They broke up into different groups. There's the Sunni, the Shiite Muslims, and there's all sorts of different groups who think they have the best idea in how to serve Muhammad or how to follow the orders of Muhammad. It's all based on, because most people are in the mode of ignorance, it's all based on ignorance. And then apart from that, you got completely ignorant religions that never had any Shastric basis. And we mentioned one of them yesterday, right? Does anyone remember which one we mentioned? It starts with an R. Rasafarian. Where they consider Haile Selassie, who used to be the Ethiopian prime minister or something, as God. And then they smoke marijuana as part of their liturgy. Can you imagine? You know, all right, it's time for Mangal Arati. Everybody toke up. I know some people would really like it. I mean, we'd fill the temple up every morning. You know, So that's part of their liturgy. And then in India, you have so many varieties concocted religion in India. I mean, India is like, it's like the seat or the home of concocted religions. You know, we say it's the home of religion, or it's the source of religion. It's also the source of concocted religions. Like, you have these tantric people. Now, tantra actually means something that connects you. It's not, the word itself does not have a negative meaning, although nowadays it has a negative, what we call, connotation. There's two things about words. There's what's called denotation and connotation. A little English language lesson for you. Denotation means the direct meaning of a word. So the direct meaning of tantra means connecting you. You know, nothing wrong with it. It's not negative. It's not positive. It just means something that connects. So, but the connotation, because people have used the word in a particular context so many times, is something dark and evil on the dark side, you know, like that. So therefore, when we say tantrics, it actually refers, because of the connotation, it refers to the dark side of the force. rather than the, you know, the white side or whatever of the force. So that's, anyway, that's how people generally understand it. So therefore, we are also tantrics in the literal or denotative understanding of the word tantra. That means because we follow the Narada Pancharatra, which is a tantric literature. But it's right-handed tantra. So there's right-handed tantra and left-handed tantra. So the left-handed tantrics, just like, you know, we're right-handed tantrics. So we have our regulated principles. No meat, fish, or eggs. No intoxication. No illicit sex. And no gambling. These are restrictions. And we have our positive injunctions. And the left-handed tantrics, they have their regulated principles. Practically the opposite. You know, that we've talked about this before. The 5 M's. Like the 3M Corporation. So this is the 5M Corporation. 3M is Minnesota Mining and something like that. Anyway. So the 5M Corporation, that's the tantrics, they practically do the opposite except gambling. Gambling is not one of their regulated principles. But so they have 5 M's. Matsya, that means fish. They have to eat fish. And you see, most of the people nowadays, actually, it's interesting. It's really interesting that most people in the world follow the 5 regulative principles of the tantrics. Actually, I just thought about that. Most of the people eat fish. One thing I was just reading, it had nothing to do with this, but I was just reading that in Jagannath Puri, even if you eat fish, it's equivalent to Mahaprasadam. But anyway, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat says that. So, but we don't take advantage of that injunction. You know, so devotees may think, wow, now you go to Jagannath. But if you do that, that's sinful. But if the people who are brought up that way don't know any better do it, then they're excused. You understand? So that's a little bit different. So you have to understand how to apply injunctions. So it's matcha. So you have to eat fish. And, you know, it's just something so disgusting. If you ever walk by a fish market, in Fiji, of course, they have these outside fish markets. And it smells so bad. And in India, too. I've been in, where is it? Oh, yeah, in Navadweep, right across the river from Amaripur. I've been into the fish market, not to buy fish, but it's close to the vegetable market. And whoa-wee! You know, you just want to puke when you walk in there. So that puts you in the mode of ignorance. You know, food in the mode of ignorance. You know, Krishna, in the Gita, he talks about different foods and different modes of nature. And that's in the mode of ignorance. So matcha, and then mamsa. There's another one. That means other types of meat. Anything. You know, anything that moves. And sometimes even while it's moving, you know, anyway, mamsa means basically you will eat me too. It's interesting, the name for meat in India indicates you will eat me. Imagine going to the store and say, can I have you will eat me? Mamsa, you will eat me. Interesting, isn't it? Because even the name of meat indicates the karmic reaction you get from the meat. But people don't think about that. I mean, it's so horrendous. Like sometimes when I was in South America, that the butcher is called the matadero. Matadero means like the killer. The killer, you know. Or matador. Mata doesn't mean mother. It means to kill. The person who kills. Matador. And they kill in such horrendous ways. You know, they cut the ears of the bull off. And they offer it to the prettiest girl in the audience. Can you imagine that? I went to one bullfight before I was a devotee. And I was just horrified. You know, they cut this poor bull's ears off. And there was some beautiful senorita there. in the audience, and they gave the ears. Here's a present for you, dear. Some bull's ears. So, all right. I mean, this is considered wonderful. So the other M's are mudra, you know, some obscene gesture. Just like, you know, the 1960s, you called it flipping the bird or something like that. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before, but I'm not going to describe what that means. You know, it's just obscenity. In other words, the essence is, you know, obscenity. And, of course, that's very common nowadays, too. You know, the kids, they learn in school all these obscene words. Even when I went to school, you know, before any of you were born, they taught, you know, the other kids taught me these words. And they said, this is real cool if you use them. And I used them, and then my mother washed my mouth out with soap. And I never used them after that. I still have the taste of soap in my mouth. So so mudra also means obscene words. You know, mudra means, of course, anyway, you understand. And then madan, you have to take intoxication. And I mean, it's part, I was just hearing several stories about when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one is he was on his way to Advaitacharya's house, and they stopped and saw some shakta, you know, left-handed tantra, who's called the sannyasi. I don't know why they would call the sannyasi, but anyway. So they stopped and took prasadam at his house, and then after prasadam, or whatever it was, probably boga, then this gentleman, he said to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would you like some happiness afterwards? It's like sometimes, you know, you're eating someone's house, they said, would you like a dessert? So happiness, and Lord Chaitanya didn't know what happiness was, what he meant by happiness. He knew happiness, real happiness. And he asked Lord Nityananda, what does he mean by that? And Lord Nityananda said he means liquor. And then it happened a second time too, but the second time Lord Chaitanya already had figured out what it was. Even though he's God, he was so innocent, he didn't know happiness meant liquor. So a second time he's on his way to Jagannath Puri, and there was a shock. They invited him to the house and said, you know, after this, hey, Swamiji, after this we're gonna just have some happiness. And Lord Chaitanya said, I'll come later to your house and take happiness with you. But he never went. But Lord Chaitanya didn't want to have this shock to commit offenses. So anyway, so that you have to drink or you have to smoke marijuana. And Prabhupada actually said that the way the hippies got marijuana, or at least it came to America, was because from India, from the so-called sadhus who smoke marijuana. I mean, I've been offered marijuana by sadhus too in India. Out of their compassion, they just want to share with me maha prasad. That's their idea. This is prasad, Shiva prasad, they say. But actually, Lord Shiva, he can drink an ocean of poison, and his so-called followers, when they take intoxication, they're taking poison, but they're not capable of digesting it. So that's ima. And then also maitunya, that means illicit sex, or, you know, quirky sex, you know, just like horrible stuff that has nothing to do with the regulated principles. So they follow these things, and it's actually religion. And sometimes they even offer human beings. Like there was one of my friends who, before he became a devotee, was going around India on a motorcycle, and he stopped at some sadhu's house. And he naturally had respect. He said, oh, my dear sadhu, how can I help you? And he said, well, please get all these ingredients for the for a ceremony I'm going to do. So he went out and got vermilion and all these ingredients. And he happened to talk to someone at the train station, because he was, you know, a white guy, not very common in that part of India. So they asked him, you know, what are you doing? He said, I'm getting the ingredients for this guru. And the person in charge of the train station, or, you know, conductor, whatever it was, he said, you know, last time someone said that to me, he disappeared. We never heard from him again. Your guru, or the guru, is going to offer you to the goddess Kali. So he got on his motorcycle and you know, as fast as his little motorcycle could go, he got out of town. So, you know, that's going on in India. I mean, it's really a fact. And then there's other stories about devotees who they would just go to the market and buy something, you know, something to eat, some sweets or whatever. And this happened in Bengal. And there was some, like, voodoo or curse put on the sweet. And then they would end up with, like, a demon in their stomach, and they had to have all sorts of exorcisms and everything like that. And, you know, it happens. I mean, or the story of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how there was, in a particular village, they were worshipping a ghost that lived in a tree. Buddha says in the Bhagavad Gita, those in the mode of ignorance worship the ghosts and spirits, those in the mode of passion worship the demons, like politicians, movie stars, people like that. Forgive me. Not all politicians. We have good ones in America. And those in the mode of goodness, they worship the demigods. So, you know, this is Bhagavad Gita. Hmm. And, of course, there's the Yanti Deva Vratan Devan Pichrin Yanti Pratej Vataha. Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja Yanti Mam Yajino Pimam. And where Krishna says, one who worships the demons, they go to the demons. One who worships the demigods, go to the demigods. One who worships the ghosts and spirits, go to the ghosts and spirits. And one who worships me, goes to me. So so there was this, they were worshiping this ghost in the tree. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur employed the father of a girl scholar to read Bhagavatam. And then after it was over, the tree fell down. So you see this in India quite often, you know. And what to speak, you know, this worship of the goddess Kali, Bhadra Kali, the horrific aspect of Kali, you know, it's not horrible, but it's just like frightening, because we don't want to offend Kali. And they have the Kali Puja in Bengal. It's very popular. And they have her with a garland of skulls and her tongue sticking out, standing on top of Lord Shiva. And, you know, they just really get into this Kali Puja thing. Of course, Kali's a great devotee. She's a Vaishnavi, servant of Lord Krishna. We understand that. But all these things are not recommended in the Shastras. So, you know, this is going on, these mode of ignorance things, mode of ignorance religions, or whatever are going on. And South America, I've experienced a lot of this. And even when it's not completely in the mode of ignorance, there's this thing called Shantariya, which is like an amalgamation of like an African religion with Catholicism. You know, they worship the saints and everything like that. But the way they do it is not bona fide. It's just a concoction. So sometimes you find things that are not completely in the mode of ignorance, but they're a mixture of some things in the mode of ignorance with some things in the mode of goodness. And, you know, you mix the whole witch's brew together, and you get something that's completely useless. Nashantim na puram gatim, as Krishna says. Anyway, so this is Kali Yuga. So basically, there's one Dharma in Kali Yuga, Krishna Nam Sankirtan, Ekon Dharma, Krishna Nam Sankirtan. The chanting the Lord's holy names, that's the Dharma. And anything that supports that Dharma is Dharmic. And anything that doesn't support the Dharma is not Dharmic. If Varnashram supports chanting, like Prabhupada here mentions Varnashram, that's Dharmic. And if Varnashram does not support chanting and the Yuga Dharma, then it's Asura Varnashram. You understand? That's the difference. It's between godly Daiva Varnashram and Asura Varnashram. Because Prabhupada does make that distinction. Daiva Varnashram supports the chanting, supports Krishna Katha, and the process, Navabhakti process. So any questions or comments? We got about half a second left. No questions, comments, arguments? Yeah. Yeah, I was right. Maybe another time. I was right. Oh, I actually was wrong. It was more than a half a second. It was 5 seconds. Okay, all glories to His divine grace. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki.